Hello, everybody. This is Joe Wren from WFIU News and WTIU News. I believe we're live on Facebook with Mayor John Hamilton from Bloomington. This is our weekly slot for Ask the Mayor. So thank you very much for having us. I know that's really busy right now.
Good to see you, Joe. Not in the same room, but nice to be with you. Thanks for continuing your spots on Ask the Mayor.
I just wanted to start quickly just to kind of check in on you. I know this pandemic's been going on for a few weeks. I know it's really having an effect on everybody, but especially public officials. How are you doing?
Well, thank you, Joe. I'm personally fine. I feel fine. I'm trying to adjust to the new rhythms of work in the pandemic structure. We're doing Zoom and Google Hangouts and WebExes and all those things all the time. I'm physically fine. You probably know my wife is actually in the hospital. She's got COVID and dealing with that in the hospital. So that's a challenge to our household. It's pretty odd and stressful not to. I would want to be in the room 24/7, you know, with her, but I can't even be there at all. So that's a little hard, but she's doing okay. And we got our fingers crossed, and we got thanks to all the great healthcare workers who are taking care of people like Dawn and others through this crisis.
So you did say she's doing okay. Mm-hmm. What's her status right now?
She is. Well, I don't want to go into all the details, but she's in the hospital. She's getting good treatment. She's, you know, we're optimistic, and she's a tough person and strong. And, but it's a tough disease. And, I just can't thank enough the doctors and nurses and orderlies and all the people in the healthcare system who are working so hard every day to take care of Dawn and people like her here in town and across the country.
Yeah, you hear these stories. It's so hard because you can't, like you said, you can't go over there. So I assume you keep in communication through things like this, huh?
Yeah, we thank goodness for cell phones and email and all that. But it's still a little, it is frustrating not to be able to be in the room with the one you love to when they're going through all this. But thank you for asking. And we're confident she's going to pull through this with the good help of the healthcare system.
You know, speaking of the healthcare system, we got a new report from IU Health Monday. 36% of ventilators are being used, 57% of ICU beds. So is Monroe County right now in a good position as this peak starts to move forward?
You know, I meet regularly 3 times a week with the head of IU Health and IU and County Health and others to kind of run through the status of things. And it has consistently been that IU Health has reported through all of their surge planning and, different scenarios that they feel that the capacity of the system is ready, that they are ready for the surge that we're kind of seeing. We don't know exactly when it will happen or is happening. But I think it appears that with all the good work everybody's doing with physical distancing, that we have helped protect that healthcare system so it doesn't get overwhelmed. And that seems to be the case so far.
We did receive a lot of emails from listeners and viewers, so I do want to get to some of those today. Of course, as many as we can in our short time that we're allowed. So let's move ahead to firefighters. Someone wanted to know about the firefighters that are serving the county, if they have some, they say, have inadequate personal protective equipment and are being forced to share N95 masks with each other from shift to shift. Is that happening?
So the question asked firefighters serving the county, which would not be the city fire department. And I cannot report on the
county.
No, the county fire departments. The city fire department is adequately provided with the personal protective equipment. We're not sharing those kind of masks. We feel good about that. You may know we had a firefighter who got diagnosed with COVID, but he's well and he's back on the job. And the only people who are connected with him have all been tested and they're negative. And so we were really pleased with that. But there may be shortages of PPE equipment in some places. I'm not aware of those particulars.
How about with the police department and those that are looking for help from police officers too? Are there precautions there?
Yeah, you know, we've had precautions in place for quite a number of weeks with the police department. Our dispatch system started several weeks ago trying to identify any emergency calls, whether there was a COVID risk in the call, both for the police officers or firefighters, as well as other individuals. And our officers have changed their protocols. They typically, police officers, for example, typically are not entering private homes now to do interviews about a case report they need to do. They're trying to avoid going into homes. They have masks that they use, police and fire, when they're interacting with the public. So those protocols are really based on the health department, the CDC guidelines, advising how we do that. And we feel we have the equipment that we need to implement that. Now, saying all that, this disease still gets around. We do all these things to protect ourselves and protect each other. It's still a tricky disease that's spreading. And so continuing the physical distancing is really important.
Can you give us an update on the Parks Department employee that was tested positive?
Uh-huh. Just a little. That Parks Department person is doing better. We're very pleased with that. But I'm not really at liberty to share personal health information on that, but we're pleased that they're on the right path.
What's your stance on people wearing face masks in public? Are you recommending that as well?
Yes. I mean, we're now following, as we have followed, the health advice, the science advice, and that changed really just 10 days ago or so, when the CDC and the county health department changed what had been not recommending overall use of face masks to doing so. Now, it gets into a lot of details, because for those of us who are asymptomatic or kind of run-of-the-mill folks, we don't want to use medical masks. The N95s and the medical quality masks are really needed to be reserved for the healthcare workers, the healthcare system, or nursing homes, or those kind of high-risk places. But it is encouraged that we use, and I do use now, a homemade mask, cloth mask, that when I go out. Again, we got to be really careful. It is not a substitute for physical distancing. It's just a supplement to the most important physical distancing. But now the health departments are recommending the use of masks, so I do so, and many of our employees do as well.
We had an email from someone asking that they saw volunteers are doing face mask drives. Can the city of Bloomington help them with volunteers or whatever resources they need?
So it's amazing. There are hundreds of people making masks. And I want to thank Jason Moore, our fire department chief, who, with along with a number of other people, has helped coordinate at Allison Jukebox. We've kind of turned that into a mask factory and a mask distribution center. So we're getting like 1,000 masks a day, or some enormous number that these volunteers have been stitching around the community. We thank them. You can go on city website, volunteer network. There's coronavirus volunteer. You'll find ways to do that. And we encourage everybody to keep doing the amazing volunteering that's happening.
We had a question about the space for those experiencing homelessness. Uh-huh. Is there a need for more, and how is that happening? Because the Shalom Center has been closed, right?
Well, they've changed their protocols. I understand that they're actually still providing meals and still doing some casework with people, but very different. They're not allowing many, many people to come in, which is important physical distancing. About 3 weeks ago, I asked a group to stand up together and work on the social safety net, the social services that we knew were going to be so important to strengthen and deal with this. And one of the things they've been looking at is housing. We know we are going to need housing for people who need to self-isolate, either because they're at risk or because they've actually been exposed or diagnosed or even are recovering. And I am pleased that we're imminently, it may even be today or tomorrow, I'm not sure, but this week, with several partners, the city of Bloomington is the fiscal agent to receive some state money to stand up an isolation center that will be focused on many dozens in a hotel that will let people isolate. Because if you don't have a home to go home to, how do you isolate? So that's what this is helping accomplish.
And what about the workers that are needed to help keep that running? Are those volunteers, or are those people that are brought in by the city?
Generally, it is a group of nonprofits, New Hope, Shalom, Wheeler, Middleway, are coordinating together to operate this shelter, and it will be their employees or their contract folks who come together to run this isolation center. We have a funding mechanism for that.
And then I assume the officials up higher in that area will help keep all that safe and know all the protocols to take for that.
Yeah, there's a lot of protocols. We're actually
absolutely
fortunate that there's one of these has just been set up in the last week or two in Marion County in Indianapolis. And so we can kind of model on a lot of how that's been established. So to make sure the health protocols are all followed.
We had a question about, and I've had a few of these myself, about the potential that about loaning money for small businesses. We know just recently there was $2 million being taken out of the food and beverage tax to help with loans for small businesses. Let's just start with that. How's the response been for those asking for those loans?
Strong. We've got a lot of people interested. I'm really pleased. I have to thank there's an economic stabilization and recovery group led by volunteers from the community, as well as Alex Crowley, the Economic Sustainable Development Director. And they've been just busting their tails for 2 weeks solid to get that money appropriated, as well as another $500,000 from the Urban Enterprise to stand up a loan program. And it just opened Thursday, I believe. And as of today, I believe we have 31 completed applications and another 100 that are in the process of the application for that funding. So we know there's a real interest in that, a real demand for it. And I just want to thank all the people who are helping make that happen. One other thing I want to note is we hope to be able to leverage that money, that it may be able to increase more than just $2.5 million, but to maybe double it with some outside funding as well. So we're working on that still.
What's the process to kind of narrow that down? You said there's 100 there waiting for money. Is there some type of committee that it goes through to say, you get this much, you get this much?
It's basically a loan committee, right, that's reviewing these, a mix of different volunteers coming together. And let me be clear, there are 31 businesses who've gone all the way through the application and have a completed application in front of that loan committee. There are another 100 who have not yet completed their application, but they've started it. Maybe they still owe financials or they have some different things to add. So we know well over 100 are seriously into the process, and 30 plus are actually pending right now. And our hope is to get the decision by the end of the week to them to move this quickly.
Some of what I hear from businesses, though, is that they're seeing these loans, of course, something that they have to pay back, but they're looking at wanting grants. They're not wanting to, you know, have to be able to pay this back because they know they're going to be hurting, especially small businesses, for this next maybe year or so. Is there a place that small businesses can go to look for grant money?
Well, the main point is the federal program, which is much, much bigger, as it should be, than the local program. Sorry, I don't know the dings if you hear those, but the federal program does allow for forgivable loans if small businesses use the proceeds for payroll and for the right kinds of purposes. And I don't know all those details, but that's really where people should be aiming for the grant dollars, because the city just doesn't have enough money to put a bunch of grant money on the street to support our businesses. We can't go into debt. We can't, you know, what we're really trying to do is bridge loans to help people get to that federal money, which is so important.
Have you heard of any businesses that have closed?
Oh, well, that's
due to this
question, Joe. I don't have a name in my head of a business that I know has closed in the last several weeks due to this. We sure hope they don't. I sure know there are tons of businesses who've dramatically changed, of course, and the hope is we can help them survive. Now, you know, look, it's the reality that in a regular year in Bloomington, in a normal year, businesses open and close. I mean, that is a typical rhythm that we're going to see. What we don't want to have happen is a bunch of potentially successful businesses fail just because of a cash flow problem in these couple months.
For those that are just joining us, this is our monthly Ask the Mayor feature on WFIU. I think we're sharing this over on WTIU Facebook as well. We're doing it live as just another way to get the information out from Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton. And next week, I think we'll be with, it will be in Nashville with town manager there. And every week we're in a different city. So we're happy to be in Bloomington and that John Hamilton has a few moments to answer some of your questions that we went out on Facebook the last 2 days to try and gather. And we'll hit a few more up here. The Indiana State Department of Health reported over the weekend new drive-through testing sites in four parts of the state. I believe it's in Evansville, Sellersburg, Gary, and Fort Wayne. And I know it was testing was something that you really strongly felt that we needed more of. That was 3 weeks ago. Can you first give us a little update maybe on how the testing process is going from what you're hearing and if maybe Bloomington would be one of those sites for testing public safety workers?
Well, we do have access to public safety workers now, first responders through the IU Health system. And I want to thank IU Health for the way they've made that possible. And we've had people getting tested. My wife got tested because of her symptoms. And there's the thousands of people going through the different protocols to get into the testing. Now, that said, the United States is way behind on what we should be with testing, and it's really hampered our ability to get a grip on what's going on with the infections and with the disease. And it's going to be super important as we try to come out of this and come out the other side of this that we have much more robust testing so that we can identify if you have been sick and you now have antibodies, or if you are sick and you need to be sequestered, quickly find that out so that as we come out on the other side of this virus, we're going to have to manage its potential threats for many, many months for sure, from all I can understand. So that testing regime, I know we're behind in the country on that, but we're catching up. And IU Health and some of the others, the health department are doing all they can, I know, to make those tests available, which is, it is really important to know.
Yeah, those were drive-through testing sites that I mentioned in those four others but those were for public safety workers. And I think, you know, that's something that we hear, I don't know about you guys in the city, but here at the station, we hear most the questions coming in. How can I think I have, the symptoms, I'm experiencing symptoms, how do I get tested? I guess the answers go to IU Health, right?
You go to there's a website where you can do virtual screening, and then you can get through to the test themselves. And I wish we could just say everybody can get tested. I mean, that's
right.
What we get, but we're not there yet. I know our first responders, there's a special setup for them to protect them. And we're very pleased with that. And, like healthcare workers who are tested, these are people who have to keep working. They're essential for our community to keep functioning. And we really want to know quickly if there's an issue with one of them, hoping we don't end like New York City had, 20 or 30% of their police department on quarantine and in isolation and big numbers of fire. And luckily we haven't had that here locally, and we hope not to.
And is it only those that are experiencing symptoms get tested, or does everybody in the public official get tested?
Joe, it's basically symptom driven.
Right.
If you have particular exposure to someone who you knew was infectious, there may be ways to do that. But the testing is not effective typically if you're not symptomatic. So it doesn't do a lot of good to test with what we have now. Now we do, I think we're moving towards some things like serological testing where they can actually see, do you have antibodies, like check your blood. You actually have been infected and you've developed antibodies. That would be very helpful too. I will say one other thing we're doing for our first responders is we've set aside some hotel rooms that we've dedicated for them. If they don't want to go back home between their shifts, this is happening for healthcare workers and also police and fire and dispatch and some of our water operators, we have a place for them to just kind of go to a hotel room and hunker down in between shifts so they don't go back and forth to their family. And that's helpful too.
Have you been tested?
I have not. I may be, but I have not. I've been completely asymptomatic.
Okay.
I think the tests are unlikely to find anything. So I don't know if I've had it or never had it. I just don't know, but I've had no symptoms.
And to go along with you talking about the hotel rooms, Indiana University in Bloomington and Indianapolis has also offered up some dorm rooms at Briscoe and at University Towers, I think, too, for healthcare workers.
Yes, and we appreciate that. They're part of the three times a week call coordinating all this, and it's really great to see people pulling together like that. That's very helpful for, you know, nurse or doctor who's running long shifts and back and forth to the COVID ward, and they just may want to sleep in a hotel room rather than going home back and forth each time. So that's really helpful.
How is the online farmers market coming along? I know there's been some adjustments made.
Yeah, the first week was intense and difficult because we had 500 plus people who signed up, and there were some long waits. The second weekend, which just completed, was very good. I think very smooth from what I understand overall. Much quicker for getting people in and out. You know, we're learning a new regime how to do this virtual grocery store, farmers market. It's down at the switch yard, so they can use that large indoor pavilion to stage food out of for the farmers. Whether that stays there or comes back downtown, we're still trying to figure out, frankly, for May when the kind of the traditional market opens. But farmers have food to sell. Hundreds and hundreds of residents want to buy the food, and it's just figuring out the new logistics to make that work safely for everybody.
We have some questions not with the coronavirus, but along with the farmers market. I wanted to get an update on the Schooner Creek Farm lawsuit. The city filed a response with the court on Monday, and on the Schooner Creek Farm lawsuit. The lawsuit argues the mayor, parks officials violated First Amendment rights at the market. In a previous Ask the Mayor, of course, you denied the claims. What was in the response that you sent on Monday?
Well, Joe, we've been sued by a couple different people for the farmers market, and I think the responses have basically said the city has been responsible and following the law in all regards in trying to run this farmers market as we have. And we're now in the fifth decade of the farmers market. I'm sorry, we have litigation, but that's the world we're in. That can happen. You know, we continue to wrestle with a challenge. Look, it is a challenging thing in a community when a now self-professed supremacist, at least identitarian, which for most of us means supremacist. They may not want to use that word, but that's what it is. In a public market, wants to be part of the system. It's anathema. It's not at all what Bloomington stands for. And I've made clear from the beginning that this market welcomes everyone, is inclusive, and stands for the values of Bloomington that absolutely condemn white supremacy or those who advocate for it. That's perfectly valid to do, and I will continue to do that. However, as a government, I also cannot stop some customer from coming to the market because of what they believe, or stop a vendor from selling at the market because of what they believe. That's the First Amendment. You have the right to believe what you want and not have the government punish you because of it. That causes stress, and we're still in the middle of that, but I'm really proud of the Parks Department and our community to keep embracing the farm community as a whole, and to keep standing up for the values of Bloomington, which are for inclusion and diversity, and we'll keep working on that.
So is that what was put in the response to the courts on Monday for that lawsuit?
I mean, basically, I haven't read those in detail, so I should be careful. But basically, we just said, look, we're following the Constitution, and we're following the law, and we're following our contract agreements with everybody. No one, Schooner Creek has suggested we're not defending or protecting them enough, and another lawsuit has suggested we're not protecting other individuals enough, and we believe we're doing the right thing overall in protecting the market, protecting the First Amendment, but also standing up for the values of the community.
And I believe there's a counterclaim in there too, saying the city saying Schooner Creek Farm was not in compliance last year. Do you have a little bit more info on what that claim is?
There were some concerns which have been shared with Schooner Creek and another vendor who we feel did not fully comply with the terms of the vendor contract. One example is under the contract, vendors are required to notify us, the city, ahead if there's going to be a different employee working the booth. They're called stand assistants. And on at least two occasions, Schooner Creek did not do that, which was a violation of the contract. And we wanted them to know that that's the case. Another vendor had a similar violation of the contract. And those, we have had violations in the past. Typically they respond, there's an interaction with the vendor to make sure they don't do it again.
We do just have a 5 minutes left, so I want to make sure I get to some of these. We have three more questions from listeners who emailed in. Someone said, there seems to be a sudden appearance of spray paint vandalism downtown while we quarantine. Who is doing that and where are the cops?
I'll try to give quick answers. I have not heard reports of more vandalism. I can tell you overall, the police reports are down significantly in the community. We have fewer crime calls and reports. I can look into that. The police are very much on the scene and working our community to protect everybody. If you have reports of that kind of thing, please do let us know. We take it very seriously.
We know there's some road construction on Kirkwood Avenue. The city is getting a head start on road projects now that there's no graduation and we're under that stay-at-home order. What are there other projects that are being done right now?
Yes, you know, if for a couple of reasons. One, because there's much less traffic right now, and because construction projects can be done safely, and they do help the economy keep going. So there are a number of construction projects from 17th Street to Kirkwood to Allen to Adams to Sayre Road to the East 3rd Street. There's a whole bunch of projects that are underway, being done well, but it's a good thing for the economy and to take advantage of the lighter traffic to get some of this work done.
And those road construction people are still under the assumption of social distancing. And that's got to be hard to do.
I call it physical distancing. Social. You just can't be close physically. It can be some of the road crews. There may be special things and procedures they need to do. It may take a little longer sometimes, but basically most of those projects allow that outdoor work to keep going. Just for example, IU Health continues their hospital construction on the Far East Side too. That's continuing full speed to keep that project going and get that new hospital opened.
A listener is concerned about the traffic flow on Walnut because of the new walking trail that crosses it. I'm assuming they're talking about into Switchyard Park.
Maybe we've had the B Link trail there, right, and the Switchyard crossing will be there. There is pedestrian access to Switchyard from Walnut now. I haven't been there. I've been self-quarantined in the house for a while, but there will be Hawkeye lights put up on Walnut for the pedestrians to protect them because that's a big street to cross, but it's really important to get people in and out of the Switchyard that way.
I think that answers that question. Anything else? My last question, I always say, you have any announcements or anything else you'd like to say?
Joe, let me just say how much I appreciate the workers of the city, not only my colleagues in city government who are, you know, out there every day picking up trash, patrolling streets, fixing potholes, making sure our water flows, all those things, but also the people who are running our hospitals and serving our healthcare and nursing homes and grocery stores and drug stores, and so many people are at work every day. And that's really what helps us, the rest of us, physically distance, which is what's helping us lower the curve on this. And I really want to thank people. We're gonna get through it. We're gonna come out the other side. We want to do it as safely as we can, and we want to do it with as little economic damage as we can. And I want to thank everybody who's working so hard for that. Thank the media for your continued work to get the word out on this.
All right. Thank you very much. Stay safe.
You too, Joe. Thanks a lot. Be well.
Okay. Bye-bye.